from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The 2014 Winter Olympics debut in Sochi, Russia today. And with events in team figure skating, women's freestyle skiing, and slopestyle snowboarding, United States Olympian Shaun White caused a stir on Wednesday when he announced his last-minute withdrawal from the slopestyle competition. We want to preview the events in this segment of Forum and the athletes to watch in the 2014 Olympics. Joining us is Rick Tittle, who is a sports talk show host. He does Titillating Sports on 95.7 The Game and is an A's fan and an expert on the A's and many other sports, and joins us from Oakland this morning. Rick, good to have you.
Hi, Michael. How you doing?
I'm okay, and let's get an overview from you on this. I mean, a lot of people are kind of out of the loop here. Figure skating, I think, has been called the queen event. It's getting a lot of attention. It's going to be a marquee event of the Winter Games, and give us a sense of what we're apt to see.
Well, it always is the number one event. It's the one that everybody, you know, and even someone like me, I'm not a figure skating enthusiast until the Olympics happen, and then I'm all enthralled again. I think it's also one of the few sports that, because it's not a team sport, you can find yourself maybe perhaps rooting for somebody from another country, and you look for the grace and the beauty of this sport. But you were right about mentioning this new format that's going to begin today, and that is the team figure skating. And you know, in the Summer Games, the gymnasts, they get to do all their individual events, and then they compete as a team as well, so they have a chance to win multiple medals. And the figure skater said, how come we don't get to do that? So for the first time ever, they are allowed to do that. So it'll be ice dancing, figure skating, and pairs. And just this morning, two of those events were filled by the USA. The men's national champion, Jeremy Abbott, is going to skate for the USA in the men's part, and then the national champions in the ice dancing, Maria Castelli and Simon Snapier, they will go. So I think it's also good for not just NBC, but fans in general. They get more figure skating than they ever did before.
And speaking about teams, you just had on, I think, on your program, father and son, the suitors, well, we're talking about somebody who was on the ice team in the past and somebody who's on the current team, yeah?
Yeah, I had Bob and Ryan Suter yesterday on my show, and Bob was part of that Miracle on Ice team in Lake Placid, and that happened when I was a freshman in high school, and I never forgot that. And we all were sort of gripped with that, and back then, you know, it was still the Cold War, and the Soviet Union was sort of, you know, demonized, and they were professional, and they were all in the Soviet Army as well, technically, against these college guys. And, you know, years later, when guys on that team like Igor Larionov and Sergei Makarov, they played for the Sharks, and they were great guys, and then you just realize that these guys are, they're all just athletes. But yeah, now his son Ryan, who's signed a $98 million contract with the Minnesota Wild a couple of years ago, he's doing very well. He leads the NHL in ice time as a defenseman. But this blue liner is our alternate captain behind Zach Parise, his teammate there in Minnesota. He was on the ice when Sidney Crosby scored that goal in sudden death overtime to win the gold for Canada last time, and that's still sticks with him. So the hockey, especially the NHL players, some people don't like it, some people do like it. We know that the NHL is going to take a break tomorrow for this, but USA and Canada, two of the favorites, and looking forward to that.
Well, we've got a local, Joe Pavelski, who plays with the San Jose Sharks, a 29-year-old. He's on the U.S. ice hockey team in Sochi. And speaking of locals, getting back to figure skating, also from San Jose, Polina Edmonds, a 15-year-old figure skater, an international debut at Sochi.
Polina Edmonds did very well in Boston at the trials, and she came in second place. And this is a 15-year-old, as you mentioned. She goes to Archbishop Mitty High School in San Jose, and her mother is a figure skating coach who came from Russia, and her father is a CFO of a software company down there. They met and had a few kids, and you know, as they say, one of the great things about the Olympics is 14 the minimum age. If you're good enough, you're old enough, and Polina Edmonds is definitely going to be, has a chance to be America's darling. She's not going to be one of the favorites, but you never know what's going to happen. The favorite is, as they call her, Queen Yuna Kim from South Korea. She won last time in Vancouver by a clear 18 points. So she is the clear favorite going into the women's individual figure skating.
And we're going to see for the first time women's long jumping and skiing?
We're going to see women's ski jumping as well, yeah. And that's a sport that you always wonder how you get started in that. I think for every person, as soon as they go off to jump, the first inclination would be to panic, but it's just to see the icy resolve as these skiers go up in that. And really, there's no reason why, you know, women can't do that just as well as men. And I think it's good because there was no reason not to have the women there. I guess it just took a few years, and there were always, and I always say crazy in a complimentary way, not a pejorative way. I'm sure there were always enough crazy women that wanted to try that as well. So I'm glad they finally get their chance.
Rick Tittle is with us online, sports talk show host for Titillating Sports on 95.7 The Game, and expert on the Oakland A's, and right now opining and giving us information about the Winter Olympics in Sochi, Russia. Just, if we could, Rick, I'd like to talk about a few other people who have some local interest, to put it mildly. Jamie Anderson, a snowboarder. But first, let's talk about a couple of skiers. Mark O'Sullivan is a skier, a three-time Olympian in downhill, Super G, and the combined, and Julia Mancuso. And these are both people who are known around Squaw Valley. One of the most accomplished of Northern California athletes, first made the Olympics at 17 back in 2002 and won a gold medal.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Julia Mancuso, and she, you know, to me, the downhill skiers are, you know, that you have to be almost have like a screw loose in a good way, just a different breed of cat. And by the way, they had the trials or the qualifying this morning. Bodie Miller, who's an interesting piece of work as well for the USA, he was the fastest today, which is good for Team USA. But those are the ones that you literally, and we've seen it before, you can break your back, your necks. People have died on that, on those downhill courses and Super G's. And yeah, you mentioned Mark O'Sullivan, born in Truckee, a place that we've all been to on our way to Tahoe, or stop there yourself. And you know, I like having the Winter Olympics with the local angle and the California people, because you know, a lot of times in the Winter Olympics, it's a lot of Americans from the Great Lakes region and the Northeast, and you know, we're all Americans, but it's always nice when you get that little extra flavor locally.
I agree, and I mentioned Jamie Anderson from South Lake Tahoe, a 23-year-old snowboarder, but a lot of the attention in terms of snowboarding has been on Shaun White, the former skateboarder and now no longer in it. And let's just talk about that. This is a guy who was known as the Flying Tomato at one point as a kid. He was an extraordinary skateboarder and also brought a lot of attention to himself in a kind of Justin Bieber way. Not to be invidious in the analogy, but he certainly ramming up Lamborghinis and things of that sort, public intoxication. Why isn't he going to participate?
He is going to participate. He's just not going to do the slope style. He's still going to wants to put all his concentration into the half pipe, where he's two-time defending champ. So he looked at the slope style course. He wasn't in the best of health, and he thought, why risk it when I have a chance for my third gold in the half pipe? So he will participate. He's just not going to do the slope style event.
Well, are you following the Winter Olympics, and particularly the competition? What excites you most in terms of the competition, new debuts or those that have been ongoing? A lot of excitement, obviously, around hockey and skiing, especially in this area, even though we don't have much snow. And you may want to join us. In fact, let me invite you to do that. Our toll-free number is available if you have questions or comments about the competition, about what's going on, debuting today with events in team figure skating and women's freestyle skiing and slopestyle snowboarding. You can join us, and we invite you to do so. Our toll-free number is 866-733-6786, and please feel free to join us now. Again, toll-free 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And, of course, you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Alyssa Ronick is a senior writer who covers free skiing and snowboarding, is covering them at the Sochi Olympics, and she's with ESPN, and she's with us from Sochi, Russia. Good to have you aboard here. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
Alyssa, tell us about what's generating excitement over there, mainly.
A lot is generating excitement. Today was the first day. I mean, opening ceremonies are tomorrow, but today was the first day of competition. We had women's and men's slope-style snowboarding qualifiers, and they were absolutely incredible. Because of the format here, it's very unique to slope-style competitions in that they hold a qualifier today where everyone makes it into either semifinals or finals. And so knowing that no one was going home, everyone just sent it. It was incredible competition. We saw finals level of riding, and I think slopestyle made a fantastic debut here in Sochi.
How do the athletes, from your perspective, I know you've talked to a lot of them, they take this competition, one would imagine, with a great deal of seriousness and earnestness.
They do. You know, I think that the snowboarders especially pride themselves on not taking anything with too much seriousness and earnestness. But once they got here, you know, I had a lot of athletes tell me that it just seemed like any other contest. They were treating it like any other day, but then they got to the top of the course and looked out and realized it wasn't just any contest and it wasn't just any day. They were at the Olympics and, you know, they saw the rings, they saw the crowd. It was a pretty impressive crowd, much more than I expected for qualifiers up here in the mountains. And, you know, and it seemed to take on a bit more seriousness. But, you know, I think one of the things these athletes all pride themselves on is having more fun than any of the other athletes here at the Olympics. All the half-pipe riders were out riding powder, you know, taking gondola laps during the event. I don't think there's a lot of other athletes who are, you know, going out and riding backcountry lines on the same day that they, or a couple days before they have to compete, but that's what makes them special.
And you're not hearing concerns about security or about the accommodations?
You know, there have been, I have to say, personally, I've been very lucky. I almost feel guilty saying how nice my room is. Up in the mountains, I've heard fewer complaints. But, yeah, a lot of my colleagues at ESPN, and I talked to a friend from Sports Illustrated whose hotel room door locked from the outside, and he didn't find that out until the first day or the first morning. Certainly missing shower curtains and holes in walls. But the security has been really tight. I mean, it certainly takes a long time to get from point A to point B, but we all know that's in our best interest, and so we just plan ahead. But safety has felt, I felt very secure here, and like I said, so lucky that I have a really nice room with pillows and blankets and towels.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And also, could you give us a little bit of a picture of what the free skiing is going to be like?
Yeah, free skiing as well, making its debut, which is really exciting. It's exciting for those of us who come from the world of X Games and action sports to see so many sports making their debut here. But, you know, and the American team is so deep, you know, in slopestyle, Nick Gepper, in halfpipe, David Wise, three-time defending X Games champ. And we're all excited that Torin Yeader was able to get healthy and be on the team. And Gus Kenworthy in slopestyle. There's just such a deep U.S. field. So that's going to be really exciting. And, you know, on the women's side of things, of course, Kaia Tursky, who's a Canadian, is such a cool story. I mean, she's here competing 5 months after ACL reconstruction, which is certainly mind-blowing. She just won the X Games. So those events are going to be quite exciting as well.
Alyssa Ronick with us from Sochi, and she's a senior writer covering free skiing as well as snowboarding for ESPN at the Sochi Olympics. Let me go to your calls here, and let's begin with Frank. Frank, join us. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I wanted to pick up on the comment about Shaun White's withdrawal. I've been seeing in the Times comments by both the slopestyle athletes and I thought by the luge athletes that they were concerned that the courses, in order to be appealing for television, have been made so technical that they're dangerous. I'm wondering whether that is actually something that either of the guests has heard about and would care to comment on.
Rick Tittle, you have any light on that?
I heard the same thing, but let's go to the person who's actually there and looking at him.
Alyssa Ronick, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, the story today is that, you know, for those who are not used to covering slopestyle events, this is par for the course. You show up at an event, the course may or may not be to the liking of the riders. They hold riders meetings and they give feedback. When they arrived on Tuesday, the course, it's a big course. It's, you know, it's an X game size, maybe even a little bigger course, especially the jumps. And when they showed up, the landings, the knuckle of the landing were low. There was the kicker, the takeoff was a bit steep, a bit poppy, so it was sending the riders pretty high, and there was too much of a step down. So the jumps certainly were feeling intimidating. The course was just not feeling right. The rails were sticky. They asked for them to be waxed, sort of skateboard style, And over the course of this week, the course designers and builders have worked really hard to get it to where it's at today. And today, you know, to a man, every athlete, and to a woman, we're saying this is one of the best courses I've ever ridden. It's big, but it is fantastic. We saw triple corks, double corks, and certainly not that this course is dangerous. I think that was certainly blown out of proportion. But understandably, when you have top athletes saying the course is intimidating, the course is I feel like it could be dangerous, you know, that certainly should be taken seriously, and it's something that the course builders took very seriously. And by this morning, there was a very safe, a very rideable, and, you know, a very fun course.
Let me thank the caller. We'll go to more of your calls in just a moment, but let me go, if I may, to you, Rick Tittle, getting listeners wanting to know what slopestyle snowboarding is and what free skiing is.
Free skiing, or the also known as new school skiing. It's basically, as you're just hearing, kind of an X Games type of thing where you have a lot of different tricks and things. And it's not just going, letting gravity take you down and going around slaloms or jumping down moguls. You can, there are all sorts of little jump tricks and rail tricks on the rail, a Brittany, a disaster, a 50-50. When you're on jumping, you can do a Lincoln Loop and a rodeo and a Misty. There's all sorts of slang that I think a lot of people are going to get used to, and with slope style as well. I mean, you're going to be judged not so much on one trick, but different tricks, and you're going to have rails, and you're going to have picnic tables, as they call these tabletops. It's basically kind of an obstacle course with a slope style, so it's just more fun to watch, more fun to ski as well.
Well, talking about fun to watch, Alyssa Ronick, you've said that there was a really good turnout to watch figure skating, and yet I'm looking at an article in the Los Angeles Times. It says figure skating has slipped badly in viewership here in the United States. Brian Boitano, 1988 Olympic champion, said it's close to death, and he was one of skating superstars, but you don't see any of that.
I'm not sure that question was for me.
Well, you had said earlier that you saw a lot of viewership. I just wanted to get you on record about
figure skating at slopestyle. I haven't been to any of the figure skating events. Unfortunately, I haven't been down to Adler yet, so I've only been to the mountain venues.
Well, what do you think, Rick Tittle?
Well, I was surprised to hear him say that, because that is the signature event of the Olympics. I think it could be the fact that the USA maybe hasn't had a real character. I mean, Patrick Chan from Canada is the men's figure favorite this time. As I mentioned, Yuna Kim for the women. Our Jeremy Abbott, our U.S. champion, has been very inconsistent. But it's also the Eastern Europeans, I think a lot of that with their passion for ballet as well as figure skating, they usually put out maybe a more interesting team figure skating wise. But I think one of the great things about the Olympics is you have these women and men come in who have a chance to be the darlings. And Gracie Gold won the gold for us. And I think, you know, what a great name when she wins the gold for the USA. Mirai Nagasu is back again. And then Ashley Wagner, who came in fourth, which is the pewter medal at the USA Championship, she barely made the team. And a lot of people think that Ashley Wagner has more talent than anybody if she could just get her act together. She fell down a couple times in Boston. But you know, I've always been the person as a fan, like, I'm not concerned with Madison Avenue and the ads and what the TV ratings are. You know, it's like I've never watched an event and then I thought, oh, I wonder what the rating is. You know, it's like I think people who want to see this will watch it and enjoy it.
Let me bring another one of our callers on. We go to Santa Rosa. Helen, you're on. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to mention that there is another first-time Olympian from Squaw Valley, California, and that is Travis Kinong, and he has been skiing at Squaw since he was 2 years old. His sister Megan was previously on the U.S. ski team, and this is his first Olympics.
Okay, we're glad to hear of another participant. We couldn't necessarily cover them all. And then, in fact, if you know someone who's in the Olympics, let us know, and we'll try to get their name here on board. Rick, you want to comment?
Travis Kinong, yeah, and he's a guy who I believe, if I remember, with the Alpine ski team that he was on before that, and of course Julian Mancuso, as you mentioned, is also a Squaw Valley person. But Kinong is one of those guys that you're not going to hear favored. You're going to hear the Bodie Millers and the Ted Ligetys and things like that from Team USA. But you never know, and we'll keep our fingers crossed for him.
And we'll go up to Napa and welcome Jordan. Good morning.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call, Michael. My question is for Rick, and it was funny. I was discussing this conversation with my mom when it came to pro athletes now competing in the hockey team for the Winter Olympics, and what happened to it being college students, like the story you guys were talking about before with the whatchamacallit, the Miracle on Ice team.
I think what happened was it got to the point where, I mean, the Soviet Union, technically they weren't professionals, but we knew that they were. And so they got to the point where, especially the team after the Miracle on Ice team didn't do so well, and then the more people started saying we should put our professionals in. And then when basketball went to the Dream Team, the NHL players said, well, how come with Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, and they're all playing for Team USA, and we can't. And then the first time when they had it in Nagano, it was a disaster, and guys like Jeremy Roenick trashed the hotel rooms. And then everybody said, get those NHL players out. They don't understand the competition. And I was sort of in that school, too. I'm like, why don't you just get the pros out if some of them are going to act like that. But last time in Vancouver, it was so exciting. And I think it could go back at some point. I know the National Hockey League doesn't like shutting down during the Olympics, but I think overall it is good for the sport.
Hockey's going to be, as you said earlier, mainly Canada and the U.S.?
Well, the first groupings for USA was Slovakia, Slovenia, and Russia. Write any of those teams off at your peril. But, yeah, the favorites are going to be the teams heavy NHL. So you're going to have, the Sweden team, the Finnish team also is going to be you could even say the German team could jump up. But, yeah, the heavy favorites were the silver and gold medalists last time.
And you're saying you're okay with pro athletes now in the Olympics.
Well, I'm kind of used to it at this point because, I think I don't think you should exclude amateurs from things. I don't think you should exclude pros from things. I think if you're really in the spirit of the competition going to have the world's best athletes, then you should have the world's best athletes.
And let me add here that we do have a list on our site, our website, kqed.org, about local athletes, kqed.org/forum, and those who are participating are listed there for your edification. You're listening to Forum, and we're talking with Rick Tittle of Titillating Sports and Alyssa Rounick of ESPN. This is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And we'll go to another caller. And David, that's you. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Good question. The major networks tend to concentrate on a few human interest competitors, and then that's all they show on TV, and we can't get any kind of information about all the other lesser, popular events and competitions. Where can we find, where can we go online or on TV or whatever to find more about and watch the footage of the lesser popular ones? I mean, all we see is the same people over and over again on the major networks. It drives you crazy.
Well, it's a good opportunity for Alyssa Rounick to get a plug-in for ESPN, but you want to help here, Alyssa?
Yes, certainly, if you want to read great stories about the Olympics. But because we're not a rights holder, that's all NBC. And I know that they have been streaming the events live. The unfortunate thing is it is 12 hours ahead here, so it's 10 a.m. in San Francisco. It's 10 p.m. here in Sochi. So you have to stay up pretty late. I know during this morning or during today's slopestyle qualifier, a lot of snowboard fans were online on the NBC website, staying up till 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning, U.S. time, to watch the event. So you can see them that way. It's just you're going to be watching them at odd hours during the day. You're sort of subject to whatever NBC is showing during prime time. And like you said, it's going to be American focus. It's going to be the big events and the big names.
Well, Alyssa, I'd like to get your perspective about what particularly you believe at this point people should be. What are the must-sees here in these Olympics as far as the competition from your viewpoint?
Yeah, well, so in the sports I'm here covering, absolutely half pipe and across the board, in men's and women's, snowboard and ski. Certainly, Sean White dropped out of slopestyle. It's all anyone's talking about, and he did so to concentrate on half pipe. He would become the first American athlete to win 3 straight gold medals at the Winter Olympics. It is a goal that he set for himself 4 years ago, and he very much wants to do that. He certainly has the run to do it. He's the favorite. There's no reason he shouldn't do it. So, seeing Danny Davis of the U.S. and iPod, Yuri Podlachikov, and Ayumu Hirano of Japan go after him and try and keep him off the top rung of the podium, that will be an exciting event. And for the women, Kelly Clark, she's the most dominant woman in half pipe history, man or woman. She's an American, and I think the exciting thing is to watch her go up against Tora Bright, who won in 2010, has not competed, and is just as good a place mentally as I've ever seen her, riding strong. And she is here competing in three events. She's the only athlete doing it. She's competing in slopestyle, which she did today, qualified first. She's competing in half pipe, and she's competing in border cross. It's absolutely unbelievable. I think she's one of the coolest stories of the Olympics, and hopefully, you know, Australian or not, she gets some good attention in the States, because it's absolutely incredible what she's doing, and it's going to be fun to see how well she does.
And Rick Tittle, again, Alyssa mentioned Shaun White, known for the triple cork. Can you explain to us what a triple cork is that people should look for?
I think we should go to Alyssa on that one to get a better triple cork.
Well, a cork spin is essentially an off-axis spin, and a triple cork is three flipping off-axis spins. Today, Mark McMorris, Punctu of Canada, you know, punctuated his final run with a frontside triple cork 1440. So essentially that means he was spinning frontside. He did three corked flips and spun 1440 rotation. So if you think of a 360 as being one rotation, a 720 being two, a 1440 then is four complete rotations. So he is flipping three times, spinning four times, and on an off axis. So it's a pretty technical trick.
Any other exciting moments that you're looking forward to, Rick Tittle, that you want to highlight here before we say goodbye?
I do think it's interesting that Todd Lodwick is our flag bearer. When you hear that he's been to his sixth Olympics, you figure that this guy's in his late 40s. He's only 36 years old. And I'm always curious during the opening ceremonies. Remember, we're the only country in the world that doesn't dip our flag, and it's mostly because our, you know, country is founded no more curtsying to kings and bowing to despots, and people still get irked that the USA will not dip their flag, but I'm actually kind of proud of it in a way, but I'm looking forward to getting this thing underway.
You think somebody asked in the last segment if there would be gay athletes kissing to show, like the athletes, the black athletes did years ago, raising their fists, any kind of
protest?
You know,
people will, whenever you have politics involved in sport, and whenever you're wearing your national colors, that can happen. People can have all sorts of protests. I try to look at it as just the sport itself, but, I mean, anything can happen. Right now, a Russian billionaire named Oleg Deripaska, he has taken in all the stray dogs because the Russians were going to go out and shoot all the stray dogs, and that wouldn't go over too well in America, shooting all the
No, bravo out. For the billionaire, and bravo for you, too. Thanks so much for joining us on Forum this morning. Rick Tittle, Titillating Sports, 95.7, The Game. Alyssa Raunick, senior writer, covering free skiing and snowboarding at the Sochi Olympics for ESPN, both joined us this second segment. And you can join us for another hour of Forum up ahead. Isabel Allende will be with us in studio. She has a new mystery suspense novel called Ripper. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.